So. Today we are reading from the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 15. But before we read that, we will start with the invocation. If you read the Bhagavatam, you can't miss this. What are the first three words of Srimad? Four words of Srimad Bhagavatam. What is it? No. Say that again. No. What is it? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, now what are the first four words of Srimad Bhagavatam? Okay, good. You can't miss that if you read it, because they're the first four words, yes. Remember that, right? There's other stories about those, but we won't tell them all yet. Okay. Now, this verse is going to tell something about someone like me. Oh, this is in the wrong place here. So, the 7th chapter, verse 15. Na mam duskritino muda prapajante naradama maya prita jnana Asuram, Bhavam, Ashritaha, Namam Duskrito Muda, Prapajante Naradama, Maya Prita Jnana, Asura Bhavam Ashritaha, Namam Duskrito Muda, Prapajate Naradama Maya Prita Jnana Asura Bhavam Ashritaha Namam Duskrito Muda Prapajate Naradama Maya Prita Jnana Asura Bhavam Ashritaha. Ladies from Germany, Namam Duskrito Muda, Prapajante Naradama, Maya Prita Jnana, Asuram Bhavam Ashrita. Anyone else? All right. Na. Not. Mam. Unto me. Duskritina. Miscreants. Muda. Foolish. Prapajante. Surrender. Nara Adama. Lowest among mankind. Mayaya. By the illusory energy. Aprita. Stolen. Jnana. Whose knowledge. Asuram. Demoniac. Bhavam. Nature. Ashrita. Accepting. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Now we'll do this together. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are the lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Okay, see if you can name one of those four kinds of people. Only one. Who can name one? Naradama, what is that? What do they do? They more or less follow what everyone else does. They do what everyone else does. They just follow the crowd. Okay, can someone else name another? Asura. What do they do? Demoniac. Okay, what's the third one? Muda. Okay. And what's the fourth one? And what do they do? And which one of these is good? Which one of those do we want to be? Pick one of the four. This is the choice. This is what they call a false dichotomy. Would you rather I hit your hand with a hammer or with a bat? Right? You don't have to choose either one. But generally people think they have to choose these. So I'm supposed to start reading the purport at the fourth paragraph. And there it says, first I will say a prayer to Prabhupada to ask me to bring the torchlight of knowledge. Om Ajnana Timranya Saginagana Salakaya Chaksur and Militanina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Yena Buddhali Shayam Rupakadamayam Dante Sapa Dante Kam Jai Prabhupada. Okay. In the Gita, it is clearly mentioned that the material energy works fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. We'll read these and then go back over it. It has no independent authority. It works as a shadow moves, in accordance with the movements of the object. But still, material energy is very powerful. And the atheist, due to his godless temperament, cannot know how it works. Nor can he know the plan of the Supreme Lord. Under illusion and the modes of passion and ignorance, all his plans are baffled. As in the case of Hiranyakashipu and Ravana, whose plans were smashed to dust. My friend Dwarkadish has just arrived from California. He's been here a while, but he just arrived in the room. Although they were both materially learned as scientists, philosophers, administrators, and educators, these duskriteners or miscreants are of four different patterns as outlined below. Number one are the mudhas. The mudhas are those who are grossly foolish, like hard-working beasts of burden. They want to enjoy the fruits of their labor by themselves, and so they do not want to part with them for the Supreme. The typical example of the beast of burden is the
donkey
or ass, yes. This humble beast is made to work very hard by his master. This ass does not really know for whom he works so hard day and night. He remains satisfied by filling his stomach with a bundle of grass, sleeping for a while under fear of being beaten by his master, and satisfying his sex appetite at the risk of being repeatedly kicked by the opposite party. The ass sings poetry and philosophy sometimes, but this braying sound only disturbs others. This is the position of the foolish, fruitive worker, one who does not know for whom he should work. He does not know that karma action is meant for jagna sacrifice. Most often, those who work very hard day and night to clear the burden of self-created duties say that they have no time to hear of the immortality of the living being. To such mudas, material gains, which are indestructible, are life's all in all. Despite the fact that mudas enjoy only a very small fraction of the fruit of labor, sometimes they spend sleepless days and nights for fruitive gain. And although they may get ulcers or indigestion, they are satisfied with practically no food. They are simply absorbed in working hard day and night for the benefit of illusory masters. Ignorant of their real master, the foolish workers waste their valuable time serving mammon. Unfortunately, they never surrender to the supreme master of all masters, nor do they take time to hear of him from the proper sources. The swine who eat the night soil do not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. Similarly, the foolish worker will entirely continue to hear of the sense enjoyable tidings of the flickering mundane world, but will have very little time to hear about the external living force that moves the material world. We see they have self-created duties. And what is the position of this mudha? How are they different than the devotee? What is this mudha trying to do? Isn't he working very hard? Isn't that commendable? He's working for his own fruits of labor. This is the thing that people don't realize. That even people outside of Krishna consciousness realize that if they work for God, you become happy. And if you work for yourself, then you're subject to the modes of nature that you are connected to. We think, well, I will play with the modes. Like they say, you can't play with fire without getting burnt. But we try in this world. If I just get close to it, but don't get too much of it, then I won't get burnt. So the mudha is thinking that there is so much enjoyment out there just waiting for me, right? This whole material world is there waiting for my enjoyment. I will go and enjoy, and the whole world is waiting at my feet. I remember when I was a child, I went with the family, we went to Las Vegas, and the woman was putting the coins in the machine. And you pull the coins, and hopefully more coins out. And the machine was called Break the Bank, because you pull the coins and you break the bank, right? Did it work? It did. She did break the bank. The bank inside her purse was gone when she was finished. So they don't realize what the bank is, right? They don't realize what the material nature. They all think they're going to enjoy so much that they think everything is set just for them to enjoy in a sensual way. It's kind of like the joke that people think that everything is there for their enjoyment, and whatever they do, they will do. The man is in the hotel, and he sees there's a little hole there, and it says, wife away from home. So he goes to kiss it, and he kisses it, and it sews a button on his lip, and sews his lip shut. So we are all thinking that the enjoyment is there just as we want it to be. But of course it meant that it would sew the button on his shirt. But because he was so attached to a particular kind of enjoyment, he didn't think of anything else. And this is how we're foolish. We're blinded. We want what we want when we want it. Which is when? Now. This is why the person in the mode of passion is so frustrated. Because he wants what's there in the future to be here today. What if I want it to be tomorrow? What happens? I'm always a day behind, aren't I? I want tomorrow to come. Tomorrow we'll find out what happened in the American election. But we just can't wait. We have to get to tomorrow. Well, it's already tomorrow here, but that doesn't count. But people are always thinking that I will put out so much and I will get so much back. In the play Dante's Inferno, where he was showing how the devil said that I would rather rule in hell than serve in heaven. So this is our problem. We think that if I work hard, was that one song? I got this wonderful feeling. Everything is going my way. And there was another song about, I got the Midas touch. Everything I touch turns to gold. So you go out and you get a job and everything you touch will turn to gold, right? And you'll make almost as much as you need just to survive. But people think, you know, that they need so many things in life. There was one song, I never actually heard the song, but the country western singer would sing that, I'm a very simple man and I only need four things in life. Older whiskey, younger women, faster cars, and more money. Is there any chance that person is still alive? They call it like burning the candle at both ends. What happens is the candle goes away quicker. So we're working so hard for an enjoyment. Does whiskey taste good? Does it make you smart? No, it doesn't do the things. And will younger women make him live longer? No. How about faster cars? They say it about James Dean, the actor, too fast to live, too young to die, right? And this is the way people want to live. They want to live like a movie stars, the rock stars, who are like a flash in the pan. They're beautiful for a few minutes, and then it's all gone. So the mudha is just thinking, let me work so hard, and I'll get just a few things. The trouble with these is we call it chewing the chewed. You get the gum or the sugar cane, whichever it is, and you're chewing it, and less juice is there, right? And you just keep chewing harder to get more. Some people would even take their gum and put it under the desk and pull it out to chew tomorrow. Is the juice gone? But if there was juice yesterday, there has to be juice tomorrow. But the mudha is thinking, I just have to enjoy. So if I get more money, like you said, what did he need? Older whiskey, younger women, faster cars, more money. Because more money will make people love you, right? Is it true? If you have money, they will pretend to love you. Is it not true? Right? But the trouble in this material energy is there isn't enough to go around. There's a limited amount. So if one person gets a lot, then they make the price of things go up, and you get the same or less, you find that you have less ability to get the things you need. And the things you need increases as your ability to enjoy them decreases. I remember reading this in the middle school a couple years ago when I was there. Maybe it was more than a couple. But it was called The Law of Diminishing Returns. And it says when you buy the soda like Coca-Cola or 7-Up or Limca, that the 12-ounce size is more money per ounce than the 2-liter, because they know the more you drink of it, the less you'll enjoy it. They used to advertise the cigarette. Are you smoking more and enjoying it less? Are they? Or are they enjoying it more? They are. They're smoking more, enjoying it less. So what is the solution? Switch brands, obviously, right? You get the one in the red package instead of the green package, and then you will enjoy it more, right? Is this true? Is it true? No, but they sell some more things. It's advertising, right? Advertising doesn't necessarily tell you how it is. It convinces you how much you may want this product. So the mudha is thinking it's just there, like the ass. They put the carrot out in front of him on a stick, and the stick is attached to him. And he's thinking, I'm just one step away from the carrot. But he himself is moving the carrot farther away. And it doesn't matter if it's only 1 foot away. If it's always 1 foot away, you still can't reach it, can you? And this is the way this material enjoyment is. People think if I just change it, change cigarettes, change wives, change cars, change the things, and it will all be better, won't it? Will it? Change the jobs? People think this because the things get stale. But does it have to be this way? The reason he's thinking he has a duty is because he has a duty. Prabhupada says that, like, nobody wants to die because we're eternal. If you put your finger by the ant, Chinti, you call it Hindi, Chinti? He goes around because he doesn't want to die. So because we are all eternal, none of us want to die. And because we all have a function or a duty, we look for a function or a duty. Because we have an identity, we look for an identity. Hi, my name's Bob Smith, and I work at the Lucky K supermarket, and I make almost as much as I need to support myself, but I need 10 times as much of that to enjoy the way I really like to enjoy. You think many of these people are getting the money they need to like to enjoy? And then they're working so hard, they get attached, they have to keep working harder. Is it not true? If they have lots of money, they don't have to work so much. Correct? The Ambani brothers are both worth about $20 billion. Do they have to work harder than any two people you know? Is it true? They do. They work harder than anybody, more hours, because they have more things that have to be done. We have self-created duties that we can't just let these duties go. So what is the solution here? He remains satisfied with just this bundle of grass when there's so much more. But the idea is that when we're thinking that I am the center of enjoyment, then we're willing to put ourselves even in a position of suffering as long as I'm the enjoyer. Hey, would you like to be the enjoyer? Good, I'll slap you until you're the enjoyer. You're the enjoyer. Says, doesn't that hurt? Says, yes, but I'm the enjoyer. Right? It doesn't matter what you really are getting. It matters what you think you're getting, right? Like if I promise to pay you 1 lakh of rupees per hour, you're very happy working all week long. And at the end of the week I say, sorry, I was kidding. Now are you happy? No? But you're getting 1 lakh of rupees per hour. Won't that make you happy? You're almost there, right? You almost have it. You know what? You just have to work one more day and then I'll pay you, all right? And that's the way this material energy is, because we can't really enjoy it. It's because just like our clothes are a covering, right? So if I take the doll is very nourishing, right? So if I put one cup of doll in my pocket, my hunger will be satisfied, correct? So the solution is to put 2 cups of doll in the pocket. Is that correct? If 1 cup doesn't make you full, 2 will? Does it help? Because we're putting it in the wrong place. It is being misplaced. And that is what the mudha is doing. He is foolish because he's thinking that somehow I'll be the center of enjoyment, trying to get to the center, but he can't quite get in the center because the circumstances keep moving around, right? They keep changing. The problem is that the world just doesn't function around me the way it's supposed to, isn't it? It just doesn't quite work right. If the world could just like get itself set correctly, and if the people would just act the way I wanted them to, I would be happy. Do we think this way? You know, we think like this world is like a big play and I'm the star. And you're all the side parts, right? But each person thinking, no, I'm the star. And they're all the side parts. So does this bring some conflict? It does bring some conflict. And the mudha is thinking, if I just work, I will get enough to have this ability. But some clues are given here in this. You know, this the mudha dives in, just like if you can't swim, You dive in the water and you're drowning, right? So what does this tell us? One of two things, right? What should we have done or what should we do? If we can't swim, you dive in the water, you're drowning. What would we think then? What? Don't dive in the water. Or if we've dived in the water, what? Figure out how to get out. And then once we get out, it's okay to jump back in again, right? Is it? It must be, because that's what people do, right? People go out like the Muda, work so hard during the week. So the solution is, if I just drink a lot of alcohol Friday night, then the miseries go away, right? Until Saturday morning. And then he says, this is so terrible, I'll never do it again, right? Is that correct? He won't do it again until next time. So it's true, he won't do it again until next time. So do most people think this way? You save them from drowning and they jump back in? They do, don't they? I remember there was some drunk people at the beach in Laguna, and waves were huge. I think they were Arab people. And the one person was almost drowning, and the lifeguards had to pull him out and put him on an oxygen mask. And his two friends were drunk. They started to go out in the ocean. I said, no, no, you two aren't allowed out there either. Because they just watched their friend almost drown, and he had to be put on oxygen. And yet they're going to go out and do the same thing. But it's just usually because, see, the difference is they're not supposed to be the supreme enjoyer, but I am. So it didn't work for them, but it will work for me, right? They call this the insanity, to think that if you do the same thing, you'll get a different result, right? Like if I stick my hand in the fire yesterday, I got burnt. But if I do it today, as long as I decide that I am the supreme enjoyer, because there is a supreme enjoyer, right? So as long as I decide I'm it, then I won't suffer, right? Is that it? Is it not true? I remember I saw the joke in the New Yorker magazine when I was a child. The police are chasing these two robbers, and they say, try to find a policeman when you really need one, right? So that's the way the energy is working. When they need one, they can't find one, right? But as soon as they commit a crime, boy, they're right there to make them pay that karmic debt right then and there. So Krishna is talking about these four kinds of people for obvious reasons. Like as it said here, this material energy is very difficult, right? And Krishna says, in the Gita, it is clearly mentioned that the material energy works fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. It has no independent authority. It works as a shadow moves in accordance with the moves of... But still, the material energy is very powerful. So if the material energy is bothering us, what do? That's not rhetorical. What do? What is the material energy under the control of us? Is it under the control of us, or is it fully independent to act as it wishes? Or is this a trick question and neither one of those two is true? Which one is it? Which one? It's a trick question. Okay, so what is the real answer? Krishna's the controller. So if Krishna's the controller of the material energy, why is this person not out of it? Krishna's in control of the material energy, so why is the Muda and why are certain people under the control of this energy? If Krishna... They're averse of Krishna. What didn't they do? What would be the difference of somebody who's under the control of this material energy and someone who's not? Someone has to know. What would be the difference? Why does the one person suffer and the other one doesn't? Yes? Yes, because it's just like Sri Dwarkadish has the switch to the light, right? Where the electric is. And I stick my finger in the socket, and I'm getting a big shock. Now, if I keep trying to enjoy it, I'll be in trouble. If I say, hey, please turn off the electricity. And he turns off the electricity. Is the shock over? So, we have to remember this. This was mentioned in the last verse, yes? In verse 14, Krishna says, this divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is very difficult to transcend. So give up and go home. Is that the last part? No. He says, but for those who surrender to me, it's very easy. Just like if I'm stuck to the socket and the electricity is on, if I ask the person, turn it off, I'm immediately safe. But we're so attached to trying to enjoy that. They say that's how they catch the monkey. He puts his hand in the jar to get the cookie, and then he's stuck. Now, if he just lets go of that, he can get his hand out. So in the same way, if we just let go of that enjoyment and ask Krishna, Krishna, please turn off that energy. But sometimes we have to keep asking to have that energy turned off. Because we ask so many times, turn it on, turn it on, turn it on, turn it on, more Maya, more Maya, more Maya, right? And then we wonder why we're in the Maya, because we keep asking for that. And we give mixed signals to Krishna. Mixed signals. Because we think when I'm praying, oh Krishna, I really wish that I could be devoted to you. Or Krishna, I wish I could have a brand new Mercedes-Benz car. You know, we're praying. But if we're thinking about it, oh Krishna, I really wish I could have that car. I wish I could have that woman. I wish I could have this enjoyment. Then Krishna doesn't hear that, right? What is the difference between those thoughts and prayers?
One is to turn God into your servant, and the other one is to be...
But they're more or less the same, aren't they? Like if I say to you, oh, please give me some money, or I'm saying, oh, I really wish I had some money. Is it that much different? If we're thinking these things, isn't Krishna hearing these as prayers? It's similar. It's not exactly the same as going to the deity and say, Krishna, please give me that. But you think, boy, Krishna, I'd really like to have that. Then Krishna gives it to us, and we're surprised, right? So as I say, be careful what you're wishing for, because you might get it, you know? Because this material nature is very vast. So Krishna hears these things as prayers. And that's why the mind wakes up early. Mind wakes up after the sun's getting up, so we try to wake up before that. So then what do we ask Krishna and Radha for? What do we ask Radha and Krishna for? Radha and Krishna. That's why we just say their names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We're asking Radha and Krishna for Radha and Krishna. I want you, I want you, I want you. I want you, I want to serve you, I want to be with you. I want to give up things for you. By thinking like that, then Krishna hears it. But at the same time, we're thinking, gosh, you know, I want this, I want that. So at least in the beginning, we may not be able to pull the plug and have the fan stop completely. But at least don't turn the dial up, right? And at least be aware of what our situation is. You know, we find out how attached we are. And in Vrindavan, everything is so intense. We develop a little attachment, and it's like, it's the end of the world unless we think we can have it. And we start to chant before Krishna, and we think, wow, Krishna's almost appearing to us. Everything becomes so intense here. But we have to remember that no matter what stage we're at, we can always become freed from becoming a muddha and surrender to Krishna. Because Krishna is in control of this energy. What does he say in the first part of this purport that was read yesterday? It is said in Bhagavad Gita that by simply surrendering oneself unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Krishna, one can surmount the stringent laws of material nature. So these things may be difficult, but if we surrender to Krishna, we can get beyond them. That's why it shocks some people who are, let's say, You know, we have many American people who are very attached to material things, and many Indian people who fully give themselves to Krishna. But it kind of shocked some Indians. Say someone is like a pious Hindu, not quite surrendered to Krishna, but they do some prayers to demigods, some prayers to Krishna. They stay with their one wife. They don't drink alcohol. They don't seem to have problems. But they worship all the gods just to be covered. And they try to live a fairly pious life. And along comes an American who may have some big attachments. He may have had several girlfriends. He may have a problem with alcohol. And after a few years, that person made more advancement than him. Now, how could he have made more advancement when he seemed to be more involved in the modes of nature than the so-called pious Hindu? How is that possible? What is the difference there? Because he felt he really needed to surrender, right? He felt he really needed to surrender, and he surrendered to Krishna. Krishna came and helped him. It's like a difference. The one person's reaching out a hand to Krishna. Yes, give me a few things here, and I'll give a little to you here, and that's fine. It's just like Draupadi. They were taking off the sari, and she was holding with one hand and reaching to Krishna with the other. But when she let go with both hands, then Krishna supplied more sari to her. So it is not judged by how pious. This is a good chance, right? It's like if I give you some money, and you're very smart, and you're a pious person, and I give someone else some money, and he maybe isn't, but he goes to college, and he learns how to invest, and you just go home and sleep. You're thinking you're going to rest on your laurels. So, you know, we always can return to material activities, but we also should try to not rest on the laurels we have, thinking, well, I'm a Prabhupada disciple, or I'm a pious Indian, or I've been a devotee for a while now, and I don't need to surrender so much. Because the other person may have more problems. But if he asks Krishna to relieve him from these stringent laws of material nature, he can be relieved quicker than the other person who wants somewhat to be relieved, but he doesn't have an urgent need. Because after all, if he's with a wife, and they get along well, and he has enough money to get by, he's not thinking, oh Krishna, I'm in big danger. Because he's not going to die, right? But we realize all of us, no matter what position, that person can also make advancement too. He can realize, hey, I'm here in the material world. I'm very insignificant. Even though I have these things, they can be taken away, and I can die at any time, and I really want Krishna's love. It doesn't mean that precludes them. The idea is whichever person surrenders. It's like I've even seen in the children's India book, they have American, the story of the tortoise and the hare. I forget what they are in Hindi. It's a kartosh? Kargosh. Yeah, kartosh is a potato in Russian. A kargosh, and what is the tortoise? Kachua. And a kargosh says, you know what, I can run so much faster, I'm going to sleep halfway. And he sleeps halfway, and the kachua, he goes slow and he passes him up. Because he's determined to keep going. So we have to realize, what?
Slow and steady wins the race.
Slow and steady wins the race. That's the, now it doesn't mean we can't go quick, but of the two, it's better to be steady. And this is why, again, the person who's the pious person, he may do better in the long run, even if he doesn't, because the other person with past conditioning, he has to be careful not to slip back into that. Because once, it's like if you're allergic to a peanut, and it's been 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, and you eat 20 peanuts, you could still die, right? Correct? So that's what sometimes people forget. They think, well, you know, I used to drink alcohol, and I used to smoke cigarettes, but now that it's been 10, 15, 20, 30 years, I can do them with impunity, correct? Is it true?
One material energy can get us at any moment, right?
That's why I have to realize, even at any moment, just a little mucus can come up and we can choke on it. You know, we think we're so safe that even people who are famous people get hit by cars. I was going to the Gita class on Friday night on August 5th, and a car was coming this way down the middle of both lanes. So while I'm watching for him this way, a car comes this way and hits the side of my car, which actually makes it my fault because I'm blocking the driving lane. And I had big injuries on the hand and the fingers. And it's been 3 months, I'm still having to do therapy on them. I have to go to the hospital in Mathura and they twist it and turn it, and then I have to do things on my own. And I was just pulling out of the apartment complex parking lot. I'd just gone like 3 feet into the street only. And right there, I was hit by a car. So we realized that this material world is very dangerous. When we think that we're safe and everything is okay, we may be in worse shape. Like the person says he needs faster cars, right? Does this increase their chance of... You know, it's funny, people don't think about it much. They're worried about so many things, but in America, something like 45,000 people are killed every year by cars. In India, 145,000 are killed by cars. Isn't it true? And people are worried about other things, but they don't realize how dangerous this material nature actually is. So what we have to realize is not that we adjust when the material nature is trying to get us. We have to surrender more. And what's amazing is that when we try to surrender, and we avoid these obstacles of being one of these four kinds of people, if some temptation is given to us and we surrender to Krishna instead, we feel a big reward. It's like these tests come and we never know. It's cool, they have like a pop quiz. They come to class, okay, there's going to be a quiz today. So we have to study the material and know. It's just like, why do we read about these people like the Mudhas? Why do we have to read about this? We don't try to be this way, do we? So we can see when people are not surrendering to Krishna, what happens? Because they're thinking that if I just work hard, I'm going to enjoy. Because everyone wants to be happy. But they don't know the source of being happy. They just like the woman who was thinking, I'm going to break the bank. But she was thinking that the casino is the bank, and I'm going to break that bank and make a bunch of money, but she was the bank. They build these big, huge casinos, lavishly done. Do you think they build those on the money they lose or the money they win? Which one is it? The money they win, right? Yes? Do you really think that most people go in there and win money? The casinos have to win a lot more for them to support the rich owners, who quite often are organized criminals, and to also have a lavish facility. They can't be losing more than they're making. But people think like this Mudha, I'll be different, I'll go in. And the worst thing, what would be worse for someone to have? Would go in for them to lose like 1,000 rupees or win 1,000 rupees? Which would be worse? If they win 1,000 rupees, you know what they think? I can win another. I'll go home and get a lakh of rupees, and they take their lakh of rupees, and they win 1,000 rupees. But they lost the 900 and something. They lost more than they gained. They're just chasing that, if I could just win again. But they don't realize how much they're losing to get to that win. And this is how the Mudha is thinking. He's thinking that he's in a situation which is very trying and very difficult. And my solution is to just work harder. Right? I just work harder. But we have to realize that when we really pray to Krishna, not sort of, kind of, maybe, but okay, Krishna, can you sort of take this attachment a little bit away for a little while? Like the Catholic saint, was it Augustine, said, please God, make me chaste to you, but don't do it yet. Not yet. And do we think this way? Yes, I want to be surrendered to Krishna, but I don't want to do it yet. I want to do it later, when everything is just right. First, let me have all the things I want and need, and then let me surrender to Krishna. But we think when we surrender just a little, we become happy inside. Because all of those things, whether he's trying to get more money, older whiskey, younger women, faster cars, all of the idea is to become happy, isn't it? You don't say, well, okay, you can have those things as long as you agree to be miserable. Would people agree to be miserable? They might. But generally they think these things will make me happy. But if you can go straight to happy, without having to go to these things which make you miserable trying to get them, and don't quite make you happy anyway, wouldn't that be better? And with a spiritual happiness, it's available for anybody at any time. So we have to be aware of our situation and try to surrender more, because quite often we're not sure when something is thrown in our direction what our reaction will be. Will we survive or not? Sometimes we're in a safe position until something comes up. There was a story in the Sankirtan newsletter, the one boy was selling books. The woman says, come inside. And she took off all her clothes and says, have sex with me. And he says, no, I can't do that. He says, no, please do. He says, no, I can't do that. I have to stay close to my spiritual principles. She says, well, I'm disappointed, but at least you're more sincere than the Christian boy who was here last week. So you never know when this kind of situation, you know, will come up. You know, if there's no temptation, it may be easy, right? You didn't steal money because there was no money there. But if somebody left 10,000 rupees, would some of the people steal it? Are there people in this town who would steal 10,000 rupees? There are, aren't there? And some of them may be not so bad of people, but if you put the temptation out, some of them will just take it without even thinking. Is it not true? Each person has their own temptation, and some of them may think about it. Others will just take it, not think twice. Oh, I'll take that. You think here in this area, there's many sincere people, but you know how many people get money and cell phones pickpocketed and things a lot, right? So if a temptation is there, will someone take it? We have to think, just because it's not there, I'm safe. Like, okay, I don't have to worry about cars because there's no cars driving in here now, right? So I'm safe from cars, correct? Until I try to cross the street out there and they hit me. So we have to realize that the time to ask to be free from the energy is before it comes along, because it could come along, and if we're thinking about it, when it's right in front of us, we may have trouble not becoming the mood on, working hard for it. Because then we become attached to something, we have to have it, whether it's good for us or not, or whether it makes us happy or not. We just gotta have it. And we almost forget why. And this is the addictive quality of things like intoxicants and sex. Some people are addicted to food, they can't stop eating, they become huge and they just eat and eat and eat. And that must be more difficult for them, because we can just decide we won't have any intoxicants or won't go to a bar, but we have to eat. You have to go somewhere with that, right? But people have these. The material energy appears in different ways to different people. And then we have to realize, Krishna explains our circumstances, like Dwarkadish and I were talking about earlier, like his daughter's gotten married and my children have all moved on, and we remember a time when our children were all there with us, right? My two children and my granddaughter. Now my daughter lives in Bali, and my granddaughter lives in one place, and my son in another. And you know, one minute you have a family and you're all together, and another minute Krishna arranges something different. You know, also my mother was in the town. She was Prabhupada's attorney, and she was very close, so I had like four generations. And now all of a sudden I travel the world and I'm in different places. And so we have to remember that Nartha Nivriti means that I'm at least 60 or 70% more attached to Krishna than I am to everything else. Dwarkadish is attached to his daughter, I'm attached to my son and daughter. But we don't think that if we can't have them with us, we're going to go to the bar and get drunk all day, right? We can miss them and still be more attached to Krishna. But if we're more attached to one thing than Krishna, even if it's something good, we're in trouble, aren't we? Because we find if I'm still chanting, and imagine how hard that would be with things like this with family. If at the same time we weren't chanting and we were also drinking alcohol, now we become so despondent, there's no spiritual happiness, and the things we miss are even worse because now we're not just missing them because we care about them, but we're lamenting. There's a difference. Oh, I really miss them. Hope I can see them soon. It's different than just lamenting that I can't go on without them there, right? We find this that people are... That's why it's tricky for people to get married, because they get married. And then if something goes right, they become very attached. And if something goes wrong, they just get left with, you know, not knowing what to do, right? You see that with people, their husband or wife leaves them with no warning, or sometimes they wait till just the right time when things are wrong, right? Like the people are said, like if Draupadi's had a wife like that, they wait till the daughter moved out to get married, and then they would leave them. Just at the time it will hurt the most, right? Isn't it? So this can happen to people in this world. It even happens in devotee families sometimes. Or someone will die. One devotee, he's a disciple of Jayapataka Swami. He had a heavy burden to carry because there was a car accident and his wife was killed. And he said actually the accident was his fault. Now imagine that one. You lose your wife in an accident. And the accident is your fault. Just like my accident was considered my fault, even though if the car's coming this way, if I turned and hit him, it would have been their fault. But you don't want to cause an accident. But because I'm waiting for him to go by, the other car hit me. But it's still considered my fault. But at least no one was injured but me. But imagine how a person feels when they not only lose their partner, but it's their fault. So then we really have to take shelter of the spiritual energy. Because now we've lost someone very close to us. And it's not like my children, I can see them sometimes, or Draupadi can see his daughter. Now this person is gone, and we have to bear the fact that that we have fault in it. Imagine how that is, right? Isn't it true? Imagine that if you backed over one of your children or wife. Because you weren't watching, right? How would you feel? You'd always feel, I should have been watching. Isn't it true? So people get through these as a devotee. That, you know, sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes there are mistakes of just like I did in the driving, but I didn't kill someone, or the other devotee did with a, you know, at least he wasn't drunk where it's premeditated, right? That you're causing, that something can go wrong. But sometimes we make mistakes and we just have to try to go forward and not try to kick ourselves for the mistakes that are made. You know, sometimes people make mistakes in traffic and his wife died from that, but he still has to go on in devotional service, doesn't he? We don't give up just because the internal or the external got difficult. And sometimes when things are really difficult, but we choose Krishna anyway, we really get the reward. The Romans tried to get rid of the Christians. What they did is they took them out into the arena and they said, you either give up your faith or the lions eat you. They said, this is going to destroy them because either people will see they give up their faith or they get eaten by the lions. So they said, no, we won't give up our faith no matter what. And some of them were eaten by lions. And people thought, if these people would rather get eaten by a lion than give up their faith, there must be something to it. And they started joining in Christianity in huge amounts. And pretty soon, the Roman religion was gone. Nobody even knows about the Roman gods anymore, do they? Do you know about them much? No. Days are named after them, but I think the days are named more after the Greek ones, aren't they? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They're named after them. But nobody even remembers them. So we find when we are in a difficult situation working for Krishna, instead of being a difficult situation as a muda, just working hard because I have to get something, because we're in devotional service, when things get difficult, we're getting the credit. Just like I remember when I was alone in South Africa. I mean, there was no chance that it was going to work out there because the Swami I was with, Rishi Kumar, was frustrated because the government wanted to throw us out And the local people didn't like white people because white people were ones that abused them. So they came and robbed us once at gunpoint. And it was frustrating to get things going there. You know, it was hard to mix with the different races because it was illegal during apartheid government. So we had a bunch of books to try to sell, and one day I wake up and there's a note from Riju Kumar Swami. It says, "Dear Shuddhi, decided to split." And I think, here I am, a child, only that I'm totally unqualified. But I wrote to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, "I'm praying to Krishna that you will have the strength and enthusiasm to carry this out." So I pray to Prabhupada that way and pray to Krishna that way too, because I may be very unqualified and I may be subject to these modes of nature. That, you know, girls can chase me if I'm not careful, right? If I'm not more attached to Krishna, right? If I quit chanting and quit going to Mangalarti, you don't think I won't find some girl to run off with somewhere? You have to have something, right? Don't you? You have a nice plate of prasadam, you're satisfied. But if you're starving, a stale piece of bread will do. So we have to make sure that we're satisfied spiritually, because we're going to want some kind of happiness. But we find when the things come along and we choose Krishna, instead of choosing to be the muda, to work so hard, that we're satisfied just with the result. You know, it's like in South Africa, I wasn't able to do much, but I was able to keep things going. And other people came, and I was able to pay off the book debt, and gradually they got more devotees and more things happened, and now there's a big movement there. And so we find, even if we're unqualified, and even if this material energy is bigger than we are, it doesn't matter if we surrender to Krishna. That's why we gave the example. The one person may have been addicted to things, they may have liked lots of girls, not just one, and they surrendered to Krishna, they became more purified than the person who was basically a pious person but didn't care that much about making that advancement. Now, of course, those pious people who really care about making advancement, they can maybe even make more advancement. But the point is, the person who calls out to Krishna, he gets more mercy than the person who doesn't, regardless of his circumstances. That's why sometimes the little things get us in trouble. I knew when the thieves had the gun at my head and were arguing about whether to shoot me or not, that I had to surrender to Krishna, because this wasn't something I could handle on my own. It was better to chant to Krishna than try to plead with the different thieves. One had the gun at my head. Fortunately, he was the one who didn't want to shoot me. Five thieves came, four with guns and one with a crowbar to pry things open, and the one with the crowbar wanted to shoot me. And the one with the gun at my head didn't, otherwise he would have just shot me. So it gave me an opportunity to really pray to Krishna. And I don't regret that opportunity, but I don't ask for that again. But I'll tell you what, when I had that gun at my head, you can bet I chanted two really good rounds, because those were going to be the last ones that I was going to chant. You know, and we never know. You're thinking, boy, that was too bad for him, and you look the wrong way and get hit by a car out here. What, almost 500 people get killed by cars every day in India? It can't happen to you though, right? That only happens to other people. Is that right? Is it true? Right? Can't happen to you, can it? No? It can't? It can. 143,000 a year, what does that come to a day? That's about, what is that? How much?
40 or 50.
No, 143,000. That's more than, that's 10, that's, I'd say 144, that comes to about 400, isn't it? 400? 400 a day. 400 a day, right? So it's like 16 an hour. Why can't it be 400?
145,000 divided by
365. 383. So that comes to what? 15 an hour? One every 4 minutes? Every 4 minutes someone's killed by a car in India. But don't worry, it won't be you, right? It's always someone else. We think that way. So this material energy is very dangerous. I remember there was the one devotee in Mumbai. He was sleeping on the 7th story ledge. And we came home. His name was Devananda. And Shamashunda said, "Devananda, that's very dangerous to sleep on the 7th story ledge." And he said, "Shamashunda, the whole material world's dangerous. So does that mean we should make it more dangerous? Do you think Devananda is still with us here today?" Of course not. You can't do risky things like that and still be alive 45 years later. People die anyway. And people who do risky things die even quicker. And to become the Muda, we have to become a little more risky, right? We have to work a little harder, push a few other people out of the way to get what we want. Because if I want what someone else wants, I either have to let them have it, or I have to force it away from them. But they may not be happy with that. Is that true? I may want to play God and want everything to be for my enjoyment. But I may not be the only one. There may be others who want the same thing. This is why people go out to a bar, they get intoxicated, and one person wants a woman, someone else wants the same one, and knives and guns come out, and neither one of them gets it. So this is what happens being the Muda. But we should remember that no matter how difficult this material nature is, when we surrender to Krishna, He can take it away. We don't need to know how it works, right? You don't know exactly how electricity works, do you? Does that mean because you don't know, if you stick a fork in the wall, you won't feel the electricity? Does it mean that? You can say, "It won't bother me because I'm not quite sure about how electricity works." You'll feel it. So just because we're not sure how Krishna can do that, if Krishna is in control of that energy, He can take it away. If we just pray sincerely enough. So we should remember that. Otherwise we become a what?
Muda.
A Muda. Okay. Are there any questions or comments about this? It was easy for me to lecture being such a Muda myself. Give him this speak. We give him a microphone because there's a few hundred people listening on the radio, so they want you to say it in the microphone. Otherwise, they'll wonder what you're saying. Is coming. This side here.
By the way, he's a very wonderful dear friend of ours, His Grace Shrodi Prabhu. And by the way, he was the first one to planted the seeds of Krishna consciousness in South Africa. So you will be very worthy to be. He mentioned in his class that he has to go through so many, and somebody was pointing a gun on his head and trying to shoot him, but he, irregardless of that, he kept on going. And he spread very nicely in South Africa, and as he mentioned, that now South Africa is really taking off, it's booming, you know, so many people are very Krishna conscious, you know, due to the first he planted. And it was ordered by Srila Prabhupada, right, Prabhu?
Yes.
That you go to South Africa and preach?
Yes, I went with the Swami, but he left me alone there.
So we are really thankful to you, Prabhu. Thank you so much for, you know, taking all this risk, life risk, and spreading the Krishna consciousness. You know, your efforts will be always remembered. Okay, the question.
Oh, okay.
The question is, in spite of knowing all this, the fact, you know, we are listening to Srila Prabhupada tapes and with so many associations with the devotees like yours, advanced devotees, still we have some attachment, you know, with you, as you mentioned, in this material world, that we still have attachment. What is the reason why we still have some attachment, we cannot give up?
Because we've been feeding those things. Just like the monkeys, you know, they stop coming here and they go out there because people feed them out there. Because we feed them, they stay around. So we have to be careful to quit feeding them. And if you stop feeding them at first, they freak out even more. the desires freak out even more, right? But then eventually, they will subsist.